So after the death of Solomon, that Rehoboam inherited the kingdom, and already having trouble with the northern tribes, and well, most of the people, but there were the southern tribes that were loyal to David. They just were going to be whatever, whoever was the king that was of the lineage of David, they would stay with. Jeroboam was a leader. He got to be a leader in the group, and he led a sort of a mild rebellion, saying, look, you know, give us some relief. The elders went to Rehoboam and said, hey, relieve us a little bit of the tax burden. And the elders said, if you'll speak kindly to the people, they will follow you the rest of your life. Just be nice to them, speak, say, you know, we can get some relief for you. We're going to do this. Well, he also went to the young men. He got the elders, the older men, gave him advice, and he went to the young men. And you see it here in 2 Chronicles chapter 10, beginning in verse 10. This is what it reads. The young men who grew up with him spoke to him, saying, thus you shall say to the people who spoke to you, saying, your father made our yoke heavy, but you will make it lighter for us. You know? Thus you'll say, this is the way you talk to them then. Because in other words, they're quoting the people saying, you need to make it lighter for us. You shall say to them, my finger is thicker than my father's waist, my father's loins. Whereas my father loaded you with heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. The scorpion was a whip that had embedded metal in it. So the people rebelled. They said, we don't have anything done with David. We're not following David's kid. David's kid is stupid. You know, he's foolish, and we're not going to follow David's kid, Solomon's kid. He was in the lineage of David. So they left. They rebelled. And you know what happened then. You had the 10 tribes, the major 10 tribes, in the northern part, went and established their capital in Samaria. The southern tribes stayed in Jerusalem. That became their capital. Jeroboam, when he took over, got frightened. When the feast came, he said, oh, people are going to start thinking they need to go to Jerusalem, the place God chose. We're going to choose here, and I think we need to move the feast. So he moved the feast to a different, you know, a month later, and tried to make sure that the people, his people, would stay and not get siphoned off to someplace else. King after king followed the way of Jeroboam. You'll read that in the Kings, and that they followed the way of Jeroboam. They did not follow God's law. They abandoned the way of God, and this is what happened. And one king became more corrupt than the next. And so finally, in the book of 2 Kings, you see how corrupt the kings were. And I'm going to read 2 Kings chapter 17, beginning in verse 1. In the 12th year of Ahaz, the king of Judah, Hosea, the son of Elah, became king over Israel in Samaria. He did evil in the sight of the Eternal. That's Hosea. Not as the kings of Israel who were before him. He did evil in the sight of Israel, only not as the kings of Israel before him. Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against him. Hosea became servant and paid him tribute. In other words, he not only did as bad as the others, but he decided to give money to Shalmaneser. But the king of Assyria found a conspiracy in Hosea. H-O-S-H-E-A, Hosea, who had sent messengers to So, who was the king of Egypt, and had offered no tribute to the king of Assyria. So now, all of a sudden, he's double-dealing. I think we can get away with this. Maybe I can get Egypt on our side. So he sent messengers to Egypt. He wanted to get some help from Egypt. And he did not, you know, what he was paying to Assyria, he stopped. As he had done year by year, so the king of Assyria shut him up and bound him in prison. He just came right in. Israel had no defenses. They did not have enough army. They just really weren't that strong. Then the king of Assyria invaded the whole land. So they first locked him up and then invaded the whole land and went all the way up to Samaria and besieged it for 3 years. In the ninth year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria captured Samaria and carried Israel away into exile to Assyria. They went in and they just started bringing people out of there, a number of them, and settled them in Hala and Harbor, on the river of Gozen, and in the cities of the Medes. They started taking people out of there, taking Israelites out, taking them up north. Now this came about because the sons of Israel had sinned, this is verse 7, 2 Kings 17, verse 7, had sinned against the Eternal their God, who brought them up from the land of Egypt and from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and they had feared, that is, reverenced, worshipped other gods. And they walked in the customs of the nations whom the Eternal had driven out before the sons of Israel, and in the customs of the kings of Israel, which they had introduced. The sons of Israel did things secretly, which were not right against the Eternal their God. Moreover, they built for themselves high places in all their towns, watchtowers to fortified city. Then they set for themselves sacred pillars, Asherim, on every high place and under every green tree. They just started doing idolatry, wherever they could find to worship pagan gods. And there they burned incense on all the high places that the nations did, which the Eternal had carried out, had carried away to exile before them. And they did evil things, provoking the Eternal. They served idols, concerning which the Eternal said to them, "You shall not do this thing." But they went ahead. Yet the Eternal warned Israel and Judah through his prophets and every seer, saying, "Turn from your evil ways, keep my commandments, my statutes, according to all the laws which I commanded your fathers, and which I sent to you through my servants the prophets." You just obey me, keep the commandments, do what's right. However, they did not listen, and they stiffened their neck like their fathers who did not believe in the Eternal their God. They rejected the statutes and his covenant, which he made with their fathers, and his warnings with which he warned them. So they just, no, we're not doing it. We're not going to go that way. And they followed vanity and became vain, and they went after nations which surrounded them, concerning which the Eternal had commanded them not to do like them. So they just, let's just go and follow whatever the pagans are doing, let's do what they do. They forsook all the commandment of the Eternal their God and made for themselves molten images, even two calves, and made an Asherah, and worshipped all the host of heaven and served Baal. Then they made their sons and daughters pass through the fire. They practiced divination and enchantments, sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Eternal, provoking. They may even sacrifice kids, pass them through the fire. So the Eternal was very angry. By this time now, after warnings, prophet after prophet, and God's telling them, they went ahead. So the Eternal was very angry with Israel and removed them from his sight. None was left except the tribe of Judah. And also Judah did not keep the commandments of the Eternal, their God. The whole country, everything, the northern, the southern, they didn't keep it, but walked in the customs of which Israel had introduced. So they now were not. But the Eternal rejected all the descendants of Israel, afflicted them, gave them into the hand of the plunderers until he had cast them out of his sight. He gave them that land, he took it away. They took them out of it. And when he had torn Israel from the house of David, they made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king. Then Jeroboam drove Israel away from following the Eternal and made them commit a great sin. The sons of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did. They did not depart from them. Once they start in the, you know, once they started down the path of sin, they had a heck of a time. They didn't have hard, you know, isn't that funny? People don't have much of a hard time leaving the path of righteousness, but they have a terrible time leaving the path of sin. Once they get on the path of sin, they stay with it. They stay with it. They stay stubbornly with it. The sons of Israel, listen to verse 22, 2 Kings 17. The sons of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did. They did not depart from them until the Eternal removed Israel from his sight, as he spoke through all his servants, the prophets. So Israel was carried away into exile from their own land to Assyria until this day. So in verse 24, 2 Kings 17, the king of Assyria brought men, brought people from Babylon, from Kuta, from Ava, from Hamath, from Sepharvaim, and settled them in the cities of Samaria in place of the sons of Israel. Big removal of the Israelites, bringing in these other people from different places. So they possessed Samaria and lived in its cities. At the beginning of their living there, they did not fear the Eternal. Therefore, the Eternal sent lions, L-I-O-N-S, lions among them, which killed them, killed some of them. And all of a sudden, you know, oh, okay, we didn't know the customs here. We're not familiar with it. So the lions came and killed some of them. So they spoke to the king of Assyria, saying, the nations whom you have carried away into exile in the cities of Samaria do not know the customs of the God of the land. So he has sent lions among them, and behold, they kill them because they do not know the customs of the God of the land. Then the king of Assyria commanded, saying, take there one of their priests. Get some of their priests. Have the priests go down. Have the priests tell these people how to behave in this land so they don't get killed by the lions. Take there one of the priests whom you carried away into exile and let him go and live there and let him teach the customs of the, quote, God of the land. You know, we want to make sure that they're doing the right thing by the God, quote, the God of the land. So one of the priests, verse 28, whom they had carried away into exile from Samaria, came and he lived in Bethel and taught them how they should fear the Eternal, fear Yahweh. You know, this is the Yahweh. He's the invisible God. He's our God. And this is what you should do. But every nation still made gods of its own, put them in the houses of the high places which the people of Samaria had made, every nation in their cities in which they lived. They started realizing, okay, there's Yahweh. Well, then we got other gods here, and it's okay to do that too. The men of Babylon made Sukkoth, Benoth. The men of Kuth made Nergal. The men of Hamath made Ashima. And the Avites made Naboth and Sarekha, and all these Sepharvaim burned their children in the fire, and all these other gods of Sepharvaim. They had all of them had their own particular gods. They also feared, verse 32. Now they had their gods, and they also feared the Eternal and appointed from among themselves priests and high priests who acted for them in the houses of the high places. So now, a completely new and synchronized religion starts taking place in the northern area of Samaria. And they are now converted because of the lions that were biting them and all that. So the priest came down, and, you know, we got to, you got to do this. I mean, the Eternal is here, and, you know, if you don't start getting some customs. But they continued their high place and continued their paganism. Nobody said anything about it. That's perfectly okay. Verse 33, 2 Kings 17, they feared the Eternal and served their own gods. We're afraid of the Eternal. We fear him because he can send these lions. But we'll serve our own gods according to the custom of the nations from among whom they had been carried away into exile. To this day they do according to the earlier customs. They do not fear the Eternal, nor do they follow their statutes or their ordinances or the law or the commandments which the Eternal commanded the sons of Jacob, whom he named Israel, with whom the Eternal made a covenant and commanded them, saying, you shall not fear other gods, nor bow down yourselves to them, nor serve them, nor sacrifice to them. But the Eternal had brought you up from the land of Egypt with great power and with outstretched arm. Him shall you fear, and to him you shall bow, and to him you shall sacrifice. The statutes and the ordinances and the law and the commandment which that he wrote you, you shall observe to do forever, you shall not fear other gods. The covenant which I made with you, you shall not go and do this, and so on. So here came a completely new. However, verse 40, they did not listen, and they did according to their earlier custom. So while these nations feared the Eternal, they also served their idols, their children likewise, and their grandchildren, as their fathers did, so did they do all the way down to the time that the Second Kings was written. All the way down to this day, it says. So now what happened? Up north in Samaria, Israelites were moved out. Other Gentile peoples were moved in. Some Israelites were still there. Okay, some were still there. Amalgam of a bunch of people there in the northern area of Samaria. Now you see in the book of Hosea, you see how God was angry. In Hosea chapter 13, verse 16, God says this about Samaria. Samaria will be held guilty. This is Hosea 13, verse 16. Samaria will be held guilty, for she has rebelled against her God. They will fall by the sword. Their little ones will be dashed in pieces, and their pregnant women will be ripped open. It was truly when Shalmaneser of Assyria came into Israel, it was truly a slaughter. It was truly devastating. He besieged them for 3 years. He, came in and finally conquered them. He took their king captive. He just finally removed them. This is an interesting statement in 2 Chronicles. Now, he removed a lot of them. Did he remove every single person? Here's what we read in 2 Chronicles chapter 34 and verse 9. They came to Hilkiah, the high priest, and delivered the money that was brought into the house of God, which the Levites, the doorkeepers, had collected. Where did they collect them from? From Manasseh and Ephraim, and from all the remnant of Israel, and from all Judah and Benjamin and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. So there were still Manassites, Ephraimites, and remnants of Israel in the northern area. And then you'll notice in 2 Chronicles chapter 30, here comes the time of the Passover, and look what Hezekiah. Now Hezekiah was the king of Judah. Famous king of Judah, wonderful king of Judah. He withstood against the Assyrian army through faith. Now, Hezekiah reigned, by the way, 29 years from approximately 716 B.C. to 687 B.C. During that time, Israel had already gone into captivity, about 721 B.C. Hezekiah came after that. Okay, so Hezekiah's reign, 29 years, from about 716 to 687. But here's what it says. Now Hezekiah sent, this is 2 Chronicles chapter 30, verses 1 and 2. Now Hezekiah sent to all Israel and Judah, and he wrote letters also to Ephraim and Manasseh, that they should come to the house of the Eternal at Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover to the Eternal God of Israel. For the king and his princes And all the assembly in Jerusalem had decided to celebrate the Passover in the second month. So they said, you know, there's still people up there. There's still Manassites. Let's invite them. Now, meanwhile, there's this other mix, these other pagans, you know, that had come in, and they're being taught by a priest that had gone into captivity. Hey, you've got to fear the eternal now. You better do that, or you're going to have all these lions bite you and kill you. So you have that. Now in 2 Chronicles chapter 30, the same chapter, dropping down to verse 18. For a multitude of the people, even many from Ephraim and Manasseh, Issachar and Zebulun, had not purified themselves, yet they ate the Passover otherwise than prescribed. For Hezekiah prayed for them, saying, may the good eternal pardon. You know, may God pardon you because you're not totally purified. So here they came from the northern area. So not every single person from Manasseh, not every single person from Ephraim, not every person from Zebulun or from Issachar. And you find even in the New Testament, you know, I mean, Paul said, I'm from Benjamin, and some other people, you see a lady from Issachar and other places holding Jesus when she was young, you know, from some of these other tribes. Now you see also in the book of Ezra. Now after the captivity, now you know that the Judah finally was captive by Babylon. Judah was taken captive. They were stayed captive under the Persian Empire. Under Cyrus, the Jews said, we want to go back to the land. We want to go back to Jerusalem. We want to rebuild the wall. We want to rebuild the temple. So Cyrus said, okay. Darius and some of these Persian leaders said, okay. God said, I raised up Cyrus so that you could go there, and he's going to send you there. So you see that they come in. But now when they came into the land to reestablish the religion of Yahweh, the religion of God Almighty, you have this statement. They're trying to be siphoned off. They had resistance from the people in the northern area of the land of Israel. This is Ezra chapter 4. I'm going to read beginning in verse 1. Now when the enemies of Judah and Benjamin heard that the people of the exile were building a temple to the eternal God of Israel, they approached Zerubbabel. Now Zerubbabel was the leader of the return. They approached Zerubbabel and the heads of the fathers' households and said to them, let us build with you. Hey, you know what? You're building a big temple. Let us build with you. For we, like you, seek your God, and we have been sacrificing to him since the days of Esadrin, the king of Assyria, who brought us here. You know, we were brought in here. Let's participate with you. We want to do this. But Zerubbabel, verse 3, this is Ezra chapter 4, verse 3. But Zerubbabel and Jeshua and the rest of the heads of the fathers' households of Israel said to them, you have nothing in common with us in building a house to our God. But we ourselves will together build to the eternal the God of Israel, as King Cyrus, the king of Persia, has commanded us. Then the people of the land discouraged the people of Judah and frightened them from building. They tried to stop them from building that temple then. You're not going to let us participate? They tried to scare them. This is going to happen to you, something else. There's this trouble, that trouble. And they tried to frighten them and try to stop them from building the house for God. And they hired counselors against them to frustrate their counsel all the days of Cyrus, the king of Persia, even until the reign of Darius, the king of Persia. So they went against them, trying to stop them from building this this temple, the house for God, they let us participate. When they didn't want to let them participate, then they did everything to get in their way, to stop them, to interfere with them completing this. Who were these people? Who were these people that became the enemies? They were the enemies here. They did not want Israel, Judah to succeed. They did not want that temple built. They did not want them to continue there. Who were they? They were what the Jews referred to as the lion converts. They became converted because they had lions biting them, eating them, attacking them. And they were known thereafter as the Samaritans. The Samaritans. Here's what the Jews looked on as the Samaritans. And they hated the Samaritans, even all the way into Jesus' day. They looked at them as false. You're not true Israelites. You're not true worshipers of God. You're not from David's, from the Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You got into the land and you have been converted over through the lions. And you have now brought in Gentile things. So the Jewish view is that the Samaritans were Gentiles with a thin veneer of the true religion of Yahweh as a result of the lions of the land. We want to know the customs here. You know, what we're getting killed by these lions. Under that thin veneer, they said, was heathenism, not the true worship of God. The Jews then excluded them. No, we have nothing to do with you. Don't come down here. We don't have anything to do with you. Don't build it. You're not going to help us build the temple. They used their name really as an insult. To say somebody was a Samaritan was an insult. And you'll see it here in the book of John. John's Gospel, chapter 8. John's Gospel, chapter 8. You drop down to verse 48. The Jews were talking about Jesus, you know, Jesus doing these things. And now the Jews answered and said to him, they're talking to Jesus now, Do we not say rightly that you are a Samaritan? That's an insult. You're a Samaritan and you have a demon. First, it's the most insult is the Samaritan. Second insult, you have a demon. The demon is not having a demon is not as bad as being a Samaritan. That was the worst thing that could happen to you. The Samaritan view was this. Here's how they viewed it. They claim to be the descendants of native Israelites. They admit that their pagan ancestors were introduced into the land by the Assyrians. But they insist that they not be confused with the pagan people because they really are native Israelites. They claim they separated from Judah over the chosen place to worship. That they believed they worshiped in Mount Gerizim, the mountain up in the Samaria area of the Samaritans, and that the Jews wanted to worship down in Shiloh or on Zion. Now you'll remember, Jesus went to Samaria one day, you know, because where was Samaria? Here's Galilee up here, coming south, you come through Samaria. You go south and you're now in the area of Judea. Jesus up in Galilee, they called it Galilee of the Gentiles because there were a lot of crossroads and trade traffic in an area that was close to the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus was raised up in Nazareth. There was Ain up there and this other little area and so on. And you had on the Sea of Galilee, then you had some of the most populated towns where Jesus loved to go and did a lot of miracles. Then you come south and you have to pass through some of the time the area of the Samaritans. And then you come down to Jerusalem. You're always going uphill, though. When you come back to Jerusalem, you're going uphill. So they always called it going up to Jerusalem because it was a high area. Jesus, in John chapter 4, You drop down to verse 4, and you see this in John chapter 4. And he had to pass through Samaria. Okay, he had to pass through it. So in verse 5, so he came to a city of Samaria called Sychar, or Sychar, near the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Okay, there's a parcel of ground Jacob gave. There is a well there. It is there to this day. It was there in 1982. It was there in 1971, and I visited it twice. I was there in 71, and I was there in 70 and 82. And it's a wonderful well. You pump that well, it's good water, good fresh water, and it's fine. And he came to the city of Samaria called Sychar, and near the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. And Jacob's well was there, verse six. So Jesus, being wearied from his journey, was sitting thus by the well. It was about the sixth hour. So I don't know, it was close in the afternoon. There came a woman from Samaria to draw water. Jesus saw her. He said, "Give me a drink." She's drawing water from the well. Now, he didn't decide to go over. I don't think he had anything to collect it in anyhow, but he said, "Give me a drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Therefore, the Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask me for a drink, since I am a Samaritan woman?" They knew. Now notice the next part that John makes plain in the parentheses in his gospel. For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. They have no dealings with Samaritans. Because the Samaritans tried to stop them trying to come into the land, tried to co-opt them, and the Jews were worried, "You're going to try to co-opt us. You're trying to go in and counterfeit our religion. You're trying to come in here and say you are the established Israelites, and you're not. And we're not going to have it." And the Samaritans, of course, wanted to have their title, their place up in Samaria at Mount Gerizim, the mountain they believe people should worship. Here are some of the Samaritan beliefs. When you talk about God, here's what they believed: that God was beyond description or conception. Yahweh is the sustainer and creator of all. Now, they use the word, you know, Yahweh. They say, yes, we worship Yahweh. But he's beyond description and beyond conception. They also have the first five books of the Bible, which they believe in, which they copy regularly and religiously. Moses, here's what they believed about Moses. Moses was a supreme apostle of God and a unique being. They thought he was unique. A light of the world, they called him. And that they believed Moses must have existed before creation. He was, you know, he was with God in the beginning and all that, and that it was Moses. That not only was he with God at the beginning, but he is also to be a future prophet of God, and they would quote Deuteronomy 18, verse 18. Comes an emergency vehicle. I have to pause for those of you on the telesermon. There it goes. I see the ambulance or emergency vehicle just going right by. So notice what they believed. They believed Moses was the supreme apostle of God, a unique being. All the way from the light, he existed before creation. He was called the light of the world. And he was also, you remember Deuteronomy 18, verse 18, there will be, God will raise up a prophet like unto me, and you know, like unto Moses, and so on, that Moses was going to be that later prophet, the future prophet that would come into the world as well. about the Torah. The Torah were the first five books of the Old Testament, the guide of the law. They believed that the Torah was handwritten by God. It was written by the hand of God. They recognized, however, no other parts of Scripture. All the Samaritans believe in are the first five books. As a result, they believed that Mount Gerizim was the place that God chose for worship and not Zion, not Shiloh, not any of the other places where God had placed his name originally. They quote Deuteronomy chapter 27, verses 12 and 13, which reads like this. When you cross from the Jordan, these shall stand on Mount Gerizim to bless the people. There should be Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Joseph, and Benjamin. For the curse, these shall stand on Mount Ebal, Reuben, Gad. Remember that God had them stand on these two mountains and said, you know, if you obey God, you'll be blessed, and these would be the blessing, then these would be the curses if you don't obey God. They shouted from the curses. For the curse, these shall stand on Mount Ebal, Reuben, Gad, Asher, Zebulun, Dan, and Naphtali. So you have these various ones on Mount Gerizim to bless the people, on the other side to curse the people, when they don't do what God says. And that's what they believe. So their doctrine was based on only the first five books. They did not believe in a resurrection. They did not believe in a future life. They did not believe in angels. They did not believe in demons. They did not believe in anything like that, because you can't find much of that in the first five books of the Bible. So they just didn't do it. In Deuteronomy 11, verse 29, they quote, "And it shall come to pass when the Eternal your God brings you into the land where you are entering to possess it, you shall place the blessing on Mount Gerizim and the curse on Mount Ebal." That's Deuteronomy 11, verse 29. So they said Mount Gerizim is that mountain that gives you the blessing. That's the mountain God chose. That's where we should worship God. They believed in a day of vengeance and a day of reward, okay? They believed in a sort of resurrection, a reckoning, a retribution, and for that they quote Deuteronomy 32, verses 34 through 36. "Is it not laid up in store with me, sealed up in my treasuries? Vengeance is mine and retribution. In due time their foot will slip, for the day of their calamity is near, and the impending things are hastening upon them." I'm reading from Deuteronomy 32, verse 34 through 36. "For the Eternal will vindicate his people and will have compassion on his servants when he sees that their strength is gone and there is none remaining, bond or free." So that's their doctrine. They had a full set of doctrines, the Samaritans. They had their own scripture. And a lot of scholars like to get, you know, a copy of it, and you pay for it. And you can, if you go there, they'll show you their scroll of the Old Testament scripture that they have. And you have, you know, you tip them, you give them a dollar or so, and they'll just show it to you. And but you can't take it away. But, you know, people have made, I'm sure, made copies of it. And scholars have, in order to compare the first five books with, you know, the Masoretic texts and other copies and fragments. The Samaritans, an enemy to Israel. Jews have no dealings with them. Jesus talked to a Samaritan woman. We'll talk more about the history of the Samaritans in the Bible and what God says about it in our lives and in the light of the gospel of the glory of Jesus Christ.